from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point, Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. We are into postseason college basketball, postseason Syracuse basketball. Owen Valentine, Ben Shulman here, breaking down the ACC tournament landscape, what Syracuse needs to do to get into the NCAA tournament, where they sort of lie, some things that are still up in the air regarding the tournament. We've got a very fun interview a little bit later on when Jay Billis gives us some interesting ideas, various, you know, topics that have to do with the ACC tournament, the NCAA tournament, just the COVID season as a whole. Really, really good stuff out of him, as you would assume. And he leaves us with an interesting question that we'll hit later on in the show with regards to, you know, some things that may or may not happen when you look at Virginia Tech and the situation that they're currently in. But before that, Syracuse starts things off in theory right now playing NC State on Wednesday at noon. And It's a good matchup for them, I believe, but NC State is a team that is on the rise and is definitely a lot more threatening now than they once were.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, in a way it's a good matchup because, you know, quite obviously Syracuse has beat NC State twice this year. And with the exception of a little bit of messing around in the last few minutes of the first game, those were both fairly, you know, decisive victories for the Orange, not like 10-point victories, but it wasn't super in question that Syracuse was going to beat North Carolina State. But you mentioned it. The scary thing, I think, is Syracuse beats NC State. It was back on February 9th. Then the Wolfpack lose to the Blue Devils of Duke, and now they've ripped up five wins in a row, four on the road. Twice Pittsburgh, one at home, one on the road. Once against Notre Dame, once against Wake Forest. None of those ridiculous wins, although Syracuse could have used some Pittsburgh wins this year. But at Virginia on February 24th, I think is the scary one if you're on the Syracuse side looking at NC State picking up that win. And I just think they've gotten that magical hot at the right time. So it's, you know, in one sense, I think it's a good matchup because Syracuse has shown they can beat this team more than once this season. But it could be concerning to people in the 315 that NC State is the hottest team in the ACC right now, and their lineup does kind of lend itself to 2-3 zone breaking.
Yeah, when you look at that first matchup, 76-73, back in late January, Syracuse gets five guys into double figures. They were down almost 10 at half, come back with a pretty comfortable win when it's all said and done, despite the early deficit. And then that second game, the score is a little bit deceiving, I think, when you look at Syracuse with a 9-point win, but that game was close for a good amount of time. The Orange just pulling away right at the end. But I think the one thing that you really want to look into with this team is the fact that Syracuse caught them in a stretch that they were playing probably their worst basketball of the year. Obviously, Devin Daniels no longer playing. You've got to deal with that if you're NC State. And then they go on a 2-8, 10-game stretch from January to mid-February that is just terrible basketball out of them. And as you mentioned it, they've figured things out in the last 2 weeks so far of the season. And obviously you circled that win against Virginia, but this is an NC State team that has really started to look good. And you remember, you talk about the way they can approach the zone, and you've seen it at times. I think a guy that you probably look at and look in with this situation is a guy like Manny Bates, who really is not anything too special, but second time Syracuse and NC State play, he has a pretty darn good little stat line there with 17 points, 14 rebounds, does end up fouling out late in the game, but he's a guy that really isn't going off day in and day out, but played a really solid game the first time these two teams played, not the second time. And then Syracuse was able to stipend him a little bit. And then a guy like DJ Funderburk, who doesn't play the first time they play, steps in that second time around. It's a team that has the pieces, and Funderburk's a guy that can be an issue in the middle of the zone for sure. But I do think that this is probably the best first round matchup, or second round, actually, the best second round matchup that Syracuse could get itself into with regards to NC State. And the stat that sort of circles around right now is it's hard to beat a team three times, but I believe that was circulating on Twitter that it's actually not that hard to beat a team three times. As in the last decade, teams are 70%+ against teams after beating them the first two times.
Beating a team three times, that sounds like a football thing to me almost. It's hard to beat a team twice, three times. That might be the case if Syracuse was coming in with some complex game plan to try and shut down NC State. But, and this is not a slight at Syracuse whatsoever, the Orange use the same game plan every single game. They make other teams game plan for that. So, yeah, if it's worked twice, I think it's good. It's not a bad thing that it might work a third time. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think Funderburk's a guy to watch out for, obviously Bates. But, when Syracuse played Funderburk last, he was just coming back from injury. Daniels and he were out the first time. And then Funderburk returns, doesn't start, plays 23 minutes, and goes 14-6 on 4-6 from the floor. I happen to think because he was coming back from injury, he didn't play more minutes. So, what does Funderburk give you in 30 to 35 minutes? Maybe not completely healthy, but a heck of a lot more healthy than he was last time Syracuse and NC State played. I think more than 14-6. So, he and Bates are definitely guys to watch. Jericho Helms mostly shut down by Syracuse in the last matchup, 11 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. He's an interesting guy to stick in the high post too. 6'7", can pass the ball. If you take out last game for NC State, the two before that, he has 8 assists in those two games. So, I think there is an avenue here for NC State to win this game. Like, it's not a pushover. But Syracuse is expected to win this game and should win this game and needs to win this game if they want to continue playing basketball above the NIT level in 2020-21.
Yeah, when you look at the questions with revolving around the NCAA tournament, obviously we'll get into that towards the end of our show, but this is a must win. I think if you lose this game, you know your destiny. If you win this game, regardless of outcome, when you play Virginia or whoever you play in that next round, if the bracket gets shaken up a little bit, if you lose or win to Virginia, if you win today, you're still technically alive. Like, you can make the tournament, you may not, but if you lose against NC State, then you're out. And you pretty much know that instantly. But fortunately for the Orange, NC State has actually helped them over this 5-game stretch as well, playing themselves into a quad one game, or a quad one opponent, as Syracuse played them and beat them on the road. So that's currently their only quad one win if you're Syracuse. So you were rooting for NC State for a little bit, and now it's time to stop that little Wolfpack fandom right now. We teased it a little bit right off the top. Let's just get into it, because it's a really fun interview and some good conversations here. Obviously, when you look at a guy so involved in college basketball, there are so many good concepts and things that he's able to catch on to. And he's got a very fun Jim Boeheim story from a little over a decade ago that is definitely worth your time as well. So here's Jay Billis. We now welcome on Jay Billis. He is an ESPN college basketball analyst, played and coached at Duke, and is quite the rap enthusiast this morning. We see the lyrics all the time. We see little Jeezy this morning. Where's the favorite rap quote that you've ever put out on Twitter?
The favorite one? That's a good question. I'm not sure I have a favorite one. It would probably be something from TM101, I would say, but I don't know. I don't know if I have a favorite. I got a lot I listen to.
What's your like rap era? If you had to give like a start and end year of where most of your rap music comes from, what's your era?
Well, I mean, probably the 80s. It started in the late 70s, I would say. Late 70s, early 80s when I was in high school. And my high school teammates and I started listening to this band called the Sugar Hill Gang. And they had a song called Rapper's Delight, which I'm sure everybody knows, even though it's really old. But that was the first kind of hip hop I'd ever heard. And then later, you know, later on in college, you know, all my friends listened to Run DMC, stuff like that. That's sort of where it took off for me.
Yeah, Rapper's Delight is my mom's party song. So I was introduced to that one at an early age.
So that makes me feel good. It's my mom's party song. I don't feel old when I hear that.
Oh, you're not old. You're all good. You're living a young life as well. And, you know, when you sort of go through as many conferences as you've been in this year, and obviously as someone as involved as you, what, you know, has this season as a whole been like for you?
You know, it's everything's different for everybody. So, I mean, all of it is relative. So I hesitate to kind of talk about how different it is because it makes it sound like you're complaining, and I'm not. I'm very grateful for all the things I get to do. I know you guys are. But when you're just talking in a localized fashion about how my job is different or my existence is different, and not, you know, not sort of putting it on a scale of harms that have been visited on everyone from the pandemic, it's really different. I mean, the thing that has stuck out to me is how much more fun I had last year, the year before, things like that. All the other years I've done this, the fun level of the job is way down, and that's primarily because you cannot interact with your colleagues in the same way. You know, we're not going to dinner, we're not hanging out like we used to, we're not spending time in close quarters, where all your relationships get not only formed but grow. And so you not that I didn't appreciate that before, I did, but your appreciation is heightened when it's missing, obviously. And then not having fans in the arena, you know, I was thinking about it last night. The only positive of last night, aside from, you know, being able to do a game and the fact we didn't have games at this time last year, was there was no traffic after the game. But everything else was diminished from what we had last year in that game. And but, you know, I mean, so I said, okay, well, let's enjoy that I can get to the car and I won't have to hit the brake until I get to the highway. That'll be great. But that was the only good thing.
What challenges does it present to your overall game preparation that you can't be with your fellow broadcaster, especially if you're switching on to a crew with someone that you haven't broadcast a ton with before? How does it make it harder to, you know, do your job going into a game?
I don't think it makes it harder. We may be missing a few elements that we would have if we had more, you know, close quarter interaction with the coaches and players, maybe a story or an anecdote or something that we could throw into the broadcast that would enhance it. But overall, it doesn't change all that much. You know, I haven't been to near the amount of practices I would normally go to. So maybe, you know, if they're guarding something differently but I can spot some of that myself without, you know, having to see it in practice. But it's always nice when you're sure about things and you're sure about where it came from and why. But, you know, I always hark back to when, you know, coaches don't have to let us into practice. We're grateful when they do, and 99.9% of them do, and we don't have to worry about it. But on the occasion when we can't this year because of the pandemic, or if a coach would rather we're not there, I always kind of, you know, hark back to when I was an assistant coach at Duke, I was a grad assistant there. You know, we prepared for our opponent. We didn't go to their practices. We knew what they were going to do. We just watched it on film. We got to know our opponent, and that's sort of what I do, what I've always done as a broadcaster. But the other thing that's been affected is the actual in broadcast, the way we do the broadcast, I think has changed because, you know, take last night, for example, if there's a steal and a breakaway dunk by North Carolina in the North Carolina Duke game at Carolina, normally you would just let the crowd take it. You know, after the dunk, the crowd would explode and we, Dan Shulman and I wouldn't have to say anything for 10 seconds. And the atmosphere takes you, takes the emotion level up. Now, if Dan or I don't say anything after that, it's just dead air because there's no crowd. And even with their 3,500 people in a 21,000 seat arena last night, it didn't seem like there was anybody there. It was different from nobody, but it was still, it wasn't like, we were all hyped up because, hey man, there's 3,500 people, it was hard to notice. So that's changed a little bit. And I'll see, it'll be interesting to see what the adjustment's like when we get people back, whether we fall back into that yak too much thing, or let the crowd take the atmosphere.
I was reading your interview with the LA Times from earlier this week. And one of the things I wanted to just quickly dive into a little bit deeper is just how does this season impact the conversation about amateurism in college athletics?
Well, I think for people who have an open mind, it impacts it a great deal. I think when you see what the hoops that we're jumping through and the lengths that we're taking to have a season and to bank all of this television money, it's hard not to argue that these players are essential workers and that these lengths are being taken solely for the revenue. I get it. Like, we all want to give everyone a chance to compete. I want to work. You guys want to work. We all want this to go forward. And there's something positive about the American spirit in this. I'm glad we're playing. But it doesn't mean, just because I believe that we should play, doesn't mean that we shouldn't examine it for what it is and acknowledge it and talk about it and sort of hash this thing out. Because you guys know, you're on the Syracuse campus. The school is not taking these lengths for the student endeavor, other student endeavors. You know, like there are other activities that the university sponsors that are every bit as important to the participants as athletics is to the players. And university's not doing all this stuff. I mean, they're not even going to these lengths to have classes. They could go to these lengths to have in-person class, but they're not gonna do that because it's just easier to do it the other way. And there's no revenue behind it. It would cost them money to do that. There are so many people that are entrenched in one camp or the other and are unwilling to acknowledge kind of what's going on here. And some of them are unwilling to acknowledge it under oath, frankly. But it's pretty clear that we're doing this for one reason, and that's for the revenue generation because we have to have it. And that's fine. I mean, I love basketball. I'm not sure I would commentate every game I commentate if I weren't paid to do it. I wouldn't go to some of these places if they weren't paying me. So there's nothing wrong with doing things for money. But I think for the enterprise not to acknowledge it and to pretend like this is just, we're just doing this so the kids can compete. That's not the whole story here. And I think, open-minded people and reasonable people understand that.
Well, we've seen the ACC go through a lot, and now they've finally reached the postseason. The tournament is starting up on Tuesday. Is there one team or one general storyline that just catches your eye right away from the ACC postseason bracket?
Well, I don't yet know what is going to happen with Virginia Tech. They've been on pause. Are they going to be able to play? And so I don't even know when they have to declare. So say, just for argument's sake, and I don't know what the answer is going to be from Virginia Tech, but say for argument's sake that they don't feel like they can go, then the tournament gets reseeded and they move everybody around. Because of the schedules were so off this year, you had teams playing much tougher schedules within the league than others, playing more games than others. So the formula they used, the order of the teams doesn't necessarily mean which teams are the best this year. That may be true in other years, given the fact that they've had unbalanced schedules, but this year it was really unbalanced to the point of laughable, but there was nothing we could do about it. It was based upon, you know, COVID pause and all that stuff, when you could actually schedule games, if you could schedule games, things like that. So, I think some of the seedings are off based upon how good the teams, I think the teams are, but it doesn't matter. You know, you just have to lace up and play. And so I do think the right two teams are at the top. I think Florida State and Virginia are the best two teams because they're most consistent. But there's no team in this league that can't be beaten by the bottom team. There's not one. And that's usually not the case. Usually the ACC, I mean, you know, Dan Shulman pointed out last night, and I didn't know this until he told me, that the Wooden Award top 15 or final 15 for the National Player of the Year Award did not include a single ACC player. And that's unfathomable to me. If you would have told me at the beginning of the year that would happen, I would never have believed it. And I have no quarrel with it. Like you might say, okay, well, this guy, I would put this guy over that guy, but I wouldn't stamp my feet and shake my fist in the air over it. And I don't quarrel with the fact that there's no ACC team in the top 10. And I can't remember a time that's ever happened. I can't remember a time. So the league is not as strong as it's been. They have a bunch of good teams. There is not a single great team in the league, not one.
You talk about the sort of balance outside of the top two. So let's go. We'll take out the top four seeds in the ACC tournament right now. So ditch Virginia, Georgia Tech, Florida State, Virginia Tech. Who out of the rest of the field do you think can really make a run at the title?
North Carolina can. I don't know whether Syracuse can. You always have in the back of your mind that zone is difficult to deal with, especially with short prep. But the zone's different this year. It's not as good. They force some turnovers and they can get out in transition. And if they knock down a bunch of threes, they can beat people, but they don't rebound. And there's not a long armed threat either in the middle or along the baseline that has you thinking about, you know, penetrating in the middle of it. I don't give them as much of an opportunity to do something special as I would in past years. But that zone is a great tournament defense because it requires some prep and some thought, and they're always playing. Syracuse is always playing against their opponent's second best offense. Always. They don't have to guard a bunch of ball screens. They prepare all the time for the very few things that teams can do against a zone. And usually teams don't do it particularly well unless they have really good playmakers that they can put in the middle that require the middle guy in the zone to come up and can make that difficult shot there or pass out of there, which is not easy. So, I like Syracuse, but I'm not sure that they're semifinal or final capable.
One team that got to the zone pretty well is sitting at the 10 seed right now, the Duke Blue Devils. Can you remember a time where Duke was playing the first round matchup in the ACC? And what do you think their ceiling is in terms of making a run in the tournament?
The last time I can remember, it was probably the middle 90s, 1995, when Coach K had to take leave of the team in the middle of 10 games in. He had back surgery and was exhausted, and so had to leave the team. And they were actually, that team was actually much better than its record. They lost a bunch of close games, but by the end of the year, they were exhausted with having to go through what they went through. So they played back then. It was a smaller league, but they had a play-in game that was on, like, I can't remember, Thursday night or something. And that's how much smaller the league was back then. The play-in game was Thursday. Now the play-in stuff is Tuesday. That's when you know your league is too big, or not everybody should be in the postseason tournament. Like you guys probably don't want to hear this, but you know, I used to do the Big East tournament before the Big East broke up and became what it is now. And you know, back when Syracuse was in the old Big East and Connecticut and Louisville and all that stuff, West Virginia. And the Big East tournament did not take every member of the league to Madison Square Garden for the tournament. Four teams didn't make it. And it was kind of exciting toward the end of the year where the teams down in the bottom quadrant were playing just to make it to New York. And Sean McDonough and I, who used to do the play-by-play back then for the Big East tournament every year with me and Bill Raftery, he and I used to kind of argue about it. And I would say, look, if you're a real league, you got to bring everybody. If you're giving out the automatic bid, you got to let everybody come to play in this tournament. He's like, nope, that would be a disaster. And he says a number of the teams at the bottom of the league are ready for this to be over anyway. And none of them are going to do anything. And it's just a waste of everybody's time and energy. And it takes the teams who do have a chance, they have to play an extra game and it diminishes their chance. And I thought, okay, well, that's not right. You got to let everybody in. It's the best way to do it. And he was right. I think if all these leagues did that, they would have a better tournament and they would have a better regular season. But you know, everybody wants to, you know, seem like it's power to the people. Everybody's got to get in. Well, not everybody has to get in. I think it would be better if the ACC cut it down because it's the flip side of that is, you know why they're doing it? Television inventory. They can sell the television inventory. And so that's why they do it.
Well, one team that always seems to sneak into the NCAA tournament, maybe not the ACC tournament, is Syracuse of recent years floating around the bubble. The Orange are right now in Lunardi's last four out. I know you're not a bracketologist by trade, but what do you think Syracuse may need to do to sneak into March Madness?
Win multiple games. It's not going to be enough just to win one. You're going to have to win multiple games. And the problem with this year's ACC tournament is usually the games you win in the tournament would provide you a really high value target. And this year, the value of the wins is diminished. They don't give you a lot in the metrics. And that's just the strength of the league. It's not as powerful as it was. So do I think Syracuse is good enough to get into the tournament? I do. But it also sort of brings up a point is like, we don't have the best 68 teams in America in the tournament. You know, we have the best 45 and then, or 50 or whatever, and then automatic qualifiers. So if we really wanted the best teams in, we would do this differently. So Syracuse is going to be better, and they're going to be better than Syracuse is probably going to be better than some of the at-larges that get in because the at-larges won against their schedule. And, you know, I don't know how we deal with that. I don't think we can. I don't think it's good enough for Syracuse or Duke to say, we're better than Drake. Drake won against their schedule and Syracuse and Duke did not. And Syracuse has won a little bit more than Duke, but not much. And then, you know, when they played Duke beat the hell out of them. So how do you process that? At some point you got to say wins and losses matter. And it's not just about somebody that thinks that they have this fantastic basketball eye. The first thing you got to do is wins and losses. And then if you can't tell the difference from that, then you go with who you think is better and using some basketball judgment. And if you want to use metrics for that, great. The system works pretty well now. Football argues over who's number five. We argue over who's number 55 or 45. And that's a pretty good system. And like, to me, if you've got to argue that you're better than than who the committee says is the 45th best team. Really? You know, I we can argue over who should be on the committee, I think we argue over seating, but you know, who gets in and stuff, unless they're doing stuff that I don't like, which is called sending messages. When somebody says, well, the committee really sent a message. No, you're not supposed to send messages. You're supposed to pick the best teams. And the message comes in, if you want to change the rules, send a message by changing the rules for getting in. But you don't send messages by saying, all right, we're going to reward this team for this. That I don't think that's right.
One last thing for you, quick, just a couple of rapid fire questions in terms of Syracuse basketball. Who's your favorite player you've ever covered in the Orange?
Wow. That's a really good question. I mean, probably my favorite player to watch was Pearl Washington, but we were contemporaries. So we were playing about the same time. Jerry McNamara was really fun to watch, but there have been so many. But I'd say McNamara.
What's your the favorite moment you've ever covered of Syracuse, maybe from one of those Big East tournaments?
The six overtime game. That was the most fun. And what was really funny about that game, the first 40 minutes were good. It was a good game, but it wasn't something we'd remember for the rest of our lives. And then after that whole six overtime thing, you know, Syracuse was in a similar position then where, you know, the bracketologists were saying they're out, they're in, they're out, they're in. And I don't know if you know this, but Coach Boeheim doesn't suffer that particularly well. And so after the game is over, one in the morning, whatever, Bill Raftery and Sean McDonough and I had gone back into the media room to collect something for the next day's games or something, maybe stats or notes. And we walked back out and we're the only ones on the garden floor. And Boeheim walked out of the little tunnel across the court and he goes, "Are we in the tournament now?" And we just started cracking up. It was so funny. That was a great moment.
If you could, this one's very random. If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Fly. I'd like to fly. That'd be awesome. I wouldn't have to board an airplane and go through all that stuff. You know, fit my carry on in. I could just fly, man.
I like that you keep the same job when you fly. I think that's funny.
I like my job. A
superhero.
I like my job, yeah.
You know, it's obviously you haven't been able to go everywhere this year, but what's your single favorite restaurant in the college basketball landscape? Does one stick out?
Usually if it's a college town, I like a burger. I eat a lot of burgers and I prefer that. My favorite restaurant is in New York City. It's called Il Molino. It's an Italian joint. I would say burger would be number one. And usually it's out west. Even though it's a chain, you know, I'm a big fan of In-N-Out Burger. I don't know that. And then Whataburger if I'm in Texas are two places that are staples for me.
Final one, outside of Gonzaga, Baylor in Michigan, who's your tournament favorite right now?
Wow, I don't know that I have one. Probably Illinois. Illinois is playing really well. The fact that they won against Michigan and beat the hell out of them without Ayo Dosunmu, I think said a lot of positive things about them. And then he comes back and they win again. They got a good vibe about them. And they got interior, perimeter. They're young in spots, which is, you know, always a question mark. But I like the spirit of that group. They're impressive.
Awesome. Jay, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you guys. I hope it's getting warmer in Syracuse.
One more thank you to Jay Billis. We stole some of his time there. We were only supposed to get 15. We got him for closer to 25. So another thank you to him for not only the interview, but the additional time as well. He brings up a lot of good points. And one of the big ones that you sort of circle is, what is the situation with regards to Virginia Tech? If they decide, or someone decides, or there's a ruling that they're unable to play or not ready, that mixes the entire bracket up and everybody except for Virginia and Florida State shift up a rank, which puts Syracuse into the seven, which means that they're now playing a game against the winner of Notre Dame and Wake Forest. Is it right? It's Notre Dame, Wake Forest.
Yeah, I believe so.
Which would be a very, very different situation than NC State into Virginia. So it would be the winner of Notre Dame Wake Forest into Florida State, which I think we are on opposite sides of which route you would rather have here, because I think that the current situation is far and beyond a better opportunity for Syracuse.
I think the other one is, but I do agree there's two ways to look at it. I'm going to assume it would be Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame has just been brutal recently. Picking up that win, I don't think would be much of a task at all. I know Syracuse barely beat Notre Dame and has beat NC State twice, but the Wolfpack are on the way up. Notre Dame lost a game to BC recently, got pummeled by NC State. So that's, you know, that's a team that's really kind of limping into the finish. And, you know, if we have the audacity to look ahead into the second round, I just hate Virginia as a matchup for Syracuse all the time. I just think they want to play at the same pace. They love to zone, not as much as Syracuse, but almost as much. And they commonly have a more fluid offensive game. I've never watched a Syracuse-Virginia game, barring the one crazy one that went to overtime, where I thought Syracuse really had a handle on what was going on at all. And, you know, I just think there's an easier road to two wins going through Notre Dame, Florida State. Florida State's a really good basketball team, but I think just partially the unknown of Florida State is better than Virginia. I think just by virtue of Virginia being Virginia, playing anyone other than them is a positive for the Orange. But I will admit, you know, for the people, and I kind of am one of these people who think one win could get Syracuse into the tournament, the NC State win does more for the Orange in the scenario that they only win one game than a Irish win would.
Yeah, that's where I think this situation sort of lies, is what happens in the instance that Syracuse wins one game. I think we're both on the same page with this regard, that NC State obviously goes further than Notre Dame does. You did sell them a little bit short. I mean, they are the reason Virginia is the one seed right now, as they just knocked off Florida State the other day. So they limped into the finish line, but boy, did they sprint when they got inside of the tape. I'll tell you that much. But when it comes to the second round, and I know there have been some ugly Syracuse-Virginia games, I think that Syracuse has a better chance of playing with Virginia than they do playing with Florida State. Now, don't get me wrong, I think both teams can easily blow Syracuse out, no questions asked. But I do think that Syracuse can match up with Virginia a little bit better just because of how familiar Jim is with the pack line defense. And I feel like he has attacked it well in the past, to the point where, like, he knows what you need to do in order to beat this Virginia defense. Although sometimes personnel wise and play wise, it doesn't end up working out. I think that Florida State can just run away from Syracuse really easily and really quickly, just with the talent they've got, the skill they've got. And it's not a knock on Virginia, but I think that Syracuse can be able to match up with them a little bit better. I think, obviously, you got to circle Jayhawk, because that's sort of where everything lies. You got to circle the big first time these two played, 21-12 for Huff. And it was the simplest, most casual 21-12 I've ever seen a big drop. It was, you know, the game starts, you're at halftime, the game finishes, and you don't really circle him, but he's got 20 plus and 10 plus for a nice little double-double there. I think that Syracuse has figured things out a little bit in the 2-3 since that first game. So it'll be a closer matchup if they play Virginia. But I think that the big thing is for me is you've got to win one game and you've got to play a reputable second game. I think a reputable second game goes a long way when it comes to the committee if you're not able to win two. If you get blown out like that first game against Virginia, or like Florida State has done to so many teams this year, I think you've crossed yourself off of a lot of lists. But if you win that first game and you play a competitive game that comes down to the wire, win or loss, I think you're okay if you're in that situation and not completely written off. But if you get blown out, another 23-point loss to UVA, it seals the deal in my mind. But I think that a close game, as I just said, like a close game will go a really long way in terms of being the last thing that people have seen, the last thing that the bracketologists have seen, the last thing that the committee has seen. Being a close game goes a really long way, because when you get blown out at the end, and it's recency bias, but you get written off of lists really quickly if the last time you were seen
was a really poor performance.
So I think we both agree that the one win tournament is possible.
Yeah.
I don't think they should get blown out. I put a little less stake though in the margin of loss. I think than you do. I think the main thing I look at is, okay, let's just assume it's an NC State world, because if we get into all the hypotheticals, it goes a million places. Syracuse beats NC State, loses to Virginia, and let's say it's like a medium margin. Like, it wasn't close, but it wasn't that much of a blowout. Virginia wins by like 9. I think it's just all about the help. Drake lost today. Lunardi still has them ahead of Syracuse. He posted a bracketology at 643. He had Syracuse as the second team out. They're second in the first four out. Drake is the second last team in. Does a win over NC State catapult Syracuse over a Drake team who couldn't win its own conference and for the most part beat up on quad threes? So maybe. Xavier has yet to play games in the tournament. You know, if Xavier gets bounced in the first round, I think Syracuse hops right over Xavier. Utah State, our own WAER friend Will Scott, put out a funny tweet today just comparing Utah State and Syracuse. And it's a little funny that Utah State's one spot above SU. I know people are down on the ACC. The Aggies have really not really played anyone, but they have picked up wins. So, you know, Utah State's tournament performance matters. And then I'm pretty skeptical, honestly, that if Syracuse wins versus NC State, any of the teams behind SU being St. Louis, Seton Hall, Memphis, SMU, Ole Miss, St. John's, I just don't see them catching the orange. So I think for Syracuse, one win and, you know, the combination of a Xavier, Utah State, or Boise State, like if two or three of those teams lose in the first round of their tournament or lose to someone they shouldn't lose to in their tournament, I could see the orange just one winning with an average second loss and getting into the tournament. If you beat Virginia though, that's when, if you're on the Syracuse side, you can feel very comfortable. You probably don't need to play a play-in game. You're probably a bye. And you have a real quad one win. No offense to NC State, where Syracuse beat a depleted team and then they won a bunch of games in the aftermath. So for the Orange, one win can do it. And Syracuse is sneaky like that. They always find a way in. Two wins would be, I think, stamp the ticket, fly to Indy, go into the tournament.
Yeah, Bart Torvik right now has Syracuse with a win over North Carolina State, just under 40% to make the tournament, and with a win over NC State and Virginia at about 70%. But I actually think, you know, you win both of those two and you're in comfortably, regardless of everything else. But that's, you got to play and you got to win ACC tournament games, which Syracuse has struggled to do in the past. And even when you look at the best teams that Syracuse has had since joining the ACC, you go back to year one when that team was absolutely unbelievable. And it's a first game exit for the Orange. So they have had a lot of struggles in ACC tournament play and they need some things to go their way this week. And that all starts Wednesday at noon. We've got you covered at WAER all week, hopefully with multiple games, multiple shows. But who knows? We got to play some games here in Syracuse. Is got to win some games if they want to be in the big tournament and not just the NIT come this year. It is a very fun episode today. We're going to try and sneak some stuff in. We've got our third host joining us relatively soon, possibly next episode. We've been pitching it for a little bit, but I think this is definitely the time that it happens. And it's a long time coming for him. It's been in the conversations for us for really long. So we're glad to finally be able to bring him on, ideally for the next episode. But some thank yous and some sort of follows to give out, some subscriptions. We've got to once again thank Jay Billis for the time today. But if you are not, please subscribe to us on YouTube, subscribe to the pod wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a follow on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod. Like the video if you're watching this on YouTube right now. Give us a comment. Feel free to just interact with us however you want. Really, there are so many ways to
to get your questions asked, questions answered. Ben's throwing the Ostrom pod background on him right now. For you audio guys, you're not quite getting the full experience just yet. You can see the video. We've got some graphics coming in and out, some stats being thrown up on the screens. There is a really fun aspect that we can throw together over on YouTube. But any way you want, really, if you want to listen, if you want to watch, if you want to tweet at us, if you want to Twitter DM us, if you want to get at us in the YouTube comments, we are really excited to be able to interact with you guys on a whole nother level as Ben's just rifling through every humanly possible background as we close the show out. So for Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. This has been the Ostrom Avenue podcast. We'll catch you next week. Stay safe.